And we're holding on your test Ahmed Bey's five lines from the bottom by the two dots. Mishnah, one of the things the Mishnah had mentioned that if you find them, you don't return them because you have the concern. They were written, but he changed his mind, decided not to give them. So one of them is shovrim, which means receipts. Now, in general, a receipt could be for any kind of debt. The Gemara mentions elsewhere the question of when a person has a regular debt that they owe somebody and then they pay back. Do we say that they have the right to withhold payment until they receive back the shtar so they can rip it up, or there are cases where the other person can tell them, I don't have the shtar available for you right now, but I'll write you out a receipt. Gemara discusses this in Bava Basra and in some other places. Here, the receipt we're talking about, though, we're going to focus particularly on a receipt for the payment of a ksuba. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Motza Shover, if a person finds a receipt which says that a woman's ksuba payment has been paid off. Bizman Sha Isha Moida, so this is sort of the inverse of the get that we talked about before, with the difference, of course, that with the get you have an iser v'heter component as well. Is she allowed to be married or not? Here it's strictly a monetary matter, but Bizman Sha Isha Moida, if the woman agrees that it's so, that in fact she was paid off her ksuba, and therefore then and this is the shover that proves it. Yachzor labal, then you return the shover to the then you return the shover to the husband, and he keeps it as a proof for the future that he did pay the ksuba. Eina isha moida, and if the woman does not admit that, lo yachzor lo lazev lo lazev, then you don't return it to either one of them. So the Gemara says bismancha isha moida mias yachzor labal. So you're telling me at any rate that when she's moida, you return it to the husband. So now, in the same vein as we had the question, As far as the get earlier on the Amud, that leaving aside the iser v'heter component, there's a concern of that maybe he wrote it months in advance, and there's going to be a mumen component in it, as we talked about over there in terms of payrus, and we talked about a shtar choiv where you have a similar concern. So here you have the same kind of thing on the face of it. V'leichu, shouldn't we have to be concerned? Duma kosa benissen, duma kosva litin benissen velenosna loyab tishrei. Maybe she wrote out the shover in Nissen, and in the end she only gave it to him in Tishrei because that's when she received the payment. Meanwhile, during that time between Nissen and Tishrei, while they were still married, in fact, Rashi says, she went and sold her ksuba for Tovas Hana, which we've learned about this before, that somebody might want to buy off her potential future ksuba payment, realizing that he's taking a risk, because if in fact she does get divorced, then he's going to receive the amount that she would have received for the ksuba because she sold it to him. On the other hand, if she dies first, then there's no ksuba payment and therefore he forfeits his money. In addition, there is also the consideration of there's other factors that go into it as well. First of all, like we said, how likely is it that she's going to die soon or not? Is she young and healthy, or is she old and sick? How are she and her husband getting along? There's also the matter of the value of the ksuba itself. This came up in Rambam Shlosha Prakim a few days ago in connection with a different context, in connection with Edom Zayin. A larger ksuba, people are more willing to risk investing in the possibility of getting it than a smaller ksuba where they figure I'm not really going to gain much from anyway, so why bother? So all those kinds of things factor into what the possible purchase price of the ksuba is. Anyway, so she may do that. She may go and sell her ksuba during those 6 months for Tovas Hanah for a small amount. Meanwhile, the mapik lo the shover. Then later on, so the husband later on goes and pays in Tishrei. Now he brings out the shover dechtib ben Nissen that's dated in Nissen, but also the mitzvah of lekuchas shalei kedin. And then he's going to end up taking away from lekuchas improperly because, in fact, the divorce didn't take place and the ksuba wasn't paid out until Tishrei, and therefore the or even if the divorce took place earlier, the point is that the payment only took place in Tishrei, and until then the ksuba is hers to do with whatever she wants, including to sell it b'tayv asana. Rashi, by the way, uses the expression that the husband is going to end up taking away karkam yuchedes l'ksubasa, the property that's specifically designated for her ksuba. Now, it wouldn't necessarily only be that. It could be any kind of asset that she sold that it could be the payment of the ksuba itself. So it's a choshen, has a long, complex explanation of why Rashi has to focus specifically on the karka, having to do with the fact that according to one way that we're going to understand the Gemara soon, is she has a migui. So that would work only if she, that would work only, as he explains over there, only if we're dealing with karka, it wouldn't work with any other kind of asset. Tosfos actually points out that the same way as we learned before about shtori choiv, that there are cases where you can write a shtar choiv not in the presence of the malve, and we learned back on Daf Yud Gimel that one such that we have shtori hakna, either according to Rav Asi, it was shtori hakna, where he's makna his assets to the malve as of now, or according to Abaye, you don't need that. There's always edim b'chsum of zochin loy. As soon as the edim sign it, then it takes effect. So here you have a similar Mishnah that says you can write the shoiva for the woman even when her husband is not around. So evidently from that Mishnah, we're not concerned about it having been written several months earlier. Tosfos wonders why the Gemara over here doesn't bring up that point. And it says, maybe indeed, we are talking about shtori akna over here. Maybe we are talking about something like that. Marsha actually points out, why is Tosfos bringing the question anyway, only based on the Mishnah in Bava Basra? You could do the same kind of inference as we did before, as far as the get and as far as the diatiki and whatever else. That if they say give, then you do give it. Where you could say the same thing, that it may have been pre-written. So why didn't Tosfos bring up that point? Marsha says one possibility is because when she sells the ksuba b'tovas hana, then you could say that maybe there are such concerns about a shoiva having been written earlier versus if she sells it outright where she needs to pay the whole thing. So actually, then we could say that here we're talking about that it's not a shoiva just for the tovas hana, but rather a shoiva for the entire ksuba. So anyway, if it comes out that it's false, she's going to be paying the people who previously bought her ksuba the full amount, because now we're talking about, let's say, she was divorced. We know she's going to be getting a full ksuba payment, and she went and sold it to somebody else. So therefore, we could be talking about a case like that, and therefore she has nothing to gain by doing a knunia like that, because anyway, then she'd be on the hook for the entire amount. Anyway, so the question is, again, getting back to the Gemara, then the question is that why, if the wife agrees that the shoiva is valid, should we return it to the husband? Don't you have this problem of the lekuchos who may have bought her ksuba in between b'tovas hana? The answer is, Amar Rav Shmamina Issa L'dishmuel. You can see from this the fact that the Mishnah is not concerned about that possibility, that Shmuel's din is valid. Shmuel says that if a person sells a shtar chayv to somebody else, and then he goes and is moichel that same shtar chayv mochel, then it is a valid mechila, and the loan is now cancelled. The one himself who was moichel, it is actually going to be is actually going to end up being liable to pay the other person. So you have like this. Reuven had a shtar chayv saying that Shimon owed him X amount. He now went and sold that shtar chayv to Levi, which would mean, therefore, that now Levi has the right to collect that debt from Shimon. Now Reuven was moichel that shtar. We say it is a valid mechila, and now Shimon doesn't have to pay Levi anymore. Reuven now is going to have to pay Levi for the fact that he caused him a hezek. This is an example of dina de gami, which the Gemara discusses in several places. And the halacha is we do say a person is chayev for dina de gami. In this case, it's gami. It's an indirect hezek, but it's still a hezek that he caused that now Levi is losing out, that he can't collect this debt from Shimon. But nevertheless, the mechila does work. How it works, we've talked about before in Bava Kamma and in other places about different reasons that Rishonim give, why exactly that would work. Is it because the whole concept of selling a shtar is only Midrabanan? That's the way that Rambam learns. So therefore, since Midaraisa it still belongs to him, then therefore he's able to be Moichel it. You have Rabbeinu Tam's understanding is that you really have two components, two shibudim. You have a shibud on the loiva himself, and you have a shibud on the nechosim. So he's able to be. So when he sells the shtar, he's really only selling the shibud of the nechosim, and the shibud aguf stays on him, and therefore he's able to be meichel it. And there's a couple of other explanations among Rishonim of how exactly this works. But in any case, Shmuel is saying that you can be meichel it. And he continues, "V'afilu Yodash Moichel." In fact, not only the one himself who sold the shtar could be Moichel, even his Yodash could. So in our scenario, Reuven died, and somebody and his son Yashin him. Reuven died. The one who the shtar was originally owned to sold it to Levi, and now Reuven's son does the same thing. He's Moichel it. That would also work, and now Levi can't collect on the shtar anymore, and now again, those yoshim are going to be chayev to pay because of dina de garmi. They're going to be chayev to pay Levi, but that's out of the scope of what we're dealing with over here. The point being, in other words, that therefore, since after a person sold a shtar choyv, they can still be moichel it, even if she had sold her ksuba, b'tovus hanah, as we just say, she could still be moichel it to the husband, and therefore there's no outstanding ksuba payment, and therefore now if the husband is going to go take it away from the lekuchas, take away the karka that was meant for the ksuba, or the small amount that they paid for the ksuba or whatever, or not the small amount, rather the actual value of the ksuba itself that they're demanding, that they're collecting as a result of this deal with the wife or whatever, then they would be able to, because in fact the debt has been nimchol, and it is valid to do that. Therefore, there's no problem. Therefore, says Rava, there's no problem in our Mishnah of the shover of the receipt having been written out ahead of time, because anyway, if there was a concern about being written ahead of time, then there's always another way that she could accomplish this. She could be moichel the ksuba anyway to begin with, and then the lakuchas aren't getting anything anyhow. So now saying that she hasn't been moichel it, and instead that the lakuchas are not going to collect because there's a shover written earlier, they're not losing anything one way or the other that they wouldn't have. So how exactly that is? You have a couple of explanations among Rishonim. One of them being essentially that she has a migri, that she doesn't actually have to be moichelet, but she has a migri that she could have said that she could say she was moichelet, and therefore now when she says I wasn't moichelet, however in fact the shover was written when it says it was rather than later, then we can believe. Tosfos discusses another detail about it. We've learned before about the concept of maimed shloshton, which is that we learned about it in Ksubas. It's come up here and there since then, I think, you can have a similar case. Reuven is owed money by Shimon. He wants to transfer ownership of the debt to Levi. So he gathered the three of them come together, Maimad Shloshlan, the three of them are standing together over there. And Reuven, in the presence of Shimon, in the presence of Levi, says that he's giving over the shtar to Levi. And then such a kinyan works, and in that case, then you can't necessarily be moichel. So why don't we assume over here she may have done Maimad Shloshlan? So first Tosfos says, because listen, so what's the situation? Are there Edim? Are there Edim, or are there not? If there are Edim, then we'll ask them how it was. And if there are no Edim, then anyway, the husband and wife could deny that there ever was a sale at all. In effect, they have another kind of migri over there. But then Tosfos goes on and discusses that maybe the whole concept of Maimed Shloshton only applies to a debt that you can collect now, as opposed to a ksuba is a future debt, which is not going to be payable. It's not going to be collectible until either the husband dies or the husband and wife divorce. So maybe you can't transfer such a debt with maimed shloshdan. And Tosfos goes on and discusses the ins and outs of that a little bit. Anyway, returning to the Gemara, though, the point is that Rava is saying that since she could be moichel the choiv in the first place, she could be moichel the ksuba, then therefore the fact that now we have to be concerned about when this shova was actually written versus when it was delivered is really not an issue, because in any case we're talking about something where she could be moichel at any time, and therefore if she has a migoy or however we explain it exactly, and therefore it works. Therefore we don't have to be concerned about that matter of a pre-written shova. Abaya, Omer, Afilo Tamer, Lesel de Shmuel. However, Abaya says you don't even have to say that. You could even say that maybe we don't accept Shmuel's did, and we would say that when a person sells a shtar chayv to somebody else, he cannot be moichel it. So she couldn't have been moichel huksuba after she sold it to this other guy. But hochav mayaskin and b'shtar ksuba yotzim atachas yada. But you know what we're talking about over here in the Mishnah is where she still has the ksuba itself in her hand. So she obviously didn't sell it, b'toivas hana, because then what would the ksuba be doing in her possession? She would have given it to the lekeach along with selling him the ksuba b'toivas hana. So therefore that would demonstrate that she didn't sell the ksuba in the first place, and therefore now when we have the shover, then we don't have to be concerned about that. It may have been pre-written, because anyway there's obviously no lakuchas to be concerned about, because if there were lakuchas, then she wouldn't still be holding on to the ksuba. The Rava Amar, whereas Rava counters to that and says no, imishum shtar ksuba, if it's just a matter of that she has the ksuba in her hand. And you're saying because of that, that shows that she didn't sell the ksuba payment to somebody else. We have to be concerned that there might actually be two ksubas out there. She may have given one of them to Lekeach, and then she goes and is moichel her husband, and she gives him a shover. And that shover now is going to be before the ksuba that the lekeach is holding on to. So she may have two ksubas. She had the shover written in Nissen. She sold the ksuba to somebody else in Ir. Now she holds on to one ksuba, which now is the one that she's bringing to Beis Din. The other one, meanwhile, the lekeach has. So now she wants to, let's say, change her mind and be moichel to her husband, and allow her husband to keep the ksuba rather than paying it to the lekeach. So therefore, she's going to claim that the shover was in fact delivered to the husband, when in fact it wasn't in fact delivered until the following Tishrei. So Rava says, you have that consideration. Therefore, you can't say that. So the only way to make it work is using Shmuel's din that she could be moichel the whole debt in the first place. On the other hand, Abaya answers to that. No, two things. First of all, we're not really concerned about the possibility of two ksubas. It's a very remote possibility, and therefore we don't really have to be concerned for it. But and also, there's another reason anyway that you don't have to be concerned. Shover bismane tarif. As a matter of fact, anybody who receives a shover, even if the actual payment was made later, based on when the shover is dated, is considered when it was paid, and therefore that the husband would be entitled to collect from lekuchas already at that point. So it wouldn't really matter, says Abaya, in your scenario, Rava, where the shover was written in Nissen, and then she later on sold the ksuba b'tovah sana in Ir, and you're telling me that maybe that she might have given a different ksuba to the other person. First of all, we're not concerned about there being two ksubas outstanding between her and her husband anyhow. But even if we were concerned about that, Abaya is saying it wouldn't really matter because the shover is dated Nissen, then therefore the husband really does have rights to that ksuba payment as of Nissen rather than as of Tishrei when he actually received the shtar. Tosfos here mentions, and we touched on this yesterday, that it seems that this is a takonas chachamim, that Abaya is saying the fact that the shover or any kind of shtar should take effect when it was signed, even if it wasn't given to him until a long time later. Which then, as we talked about yesterday, then Tosfos deals with the issue how that affects shechrurei avodim that we learned earlier in the Mishnah, where there you have an iser v'heter component, as well, because once the Eved has a shtar shikur, he can marry a bas Yisrael. So as we learned yesterday, Tosfos first says that maybe in fact, even by that case, the Chachamim's takana allows us to override the usual din min haTorah, and therefore it would work even for matters of issur v'heter. But first Tosfos says maybe not. Maybe when it comes to issur v'heter, then not. And other Rishonim similarly say that no, the matter of shechurei avodim would only affect the mammon component, like we talked about yesterday. If the Eved buys property and then sells, if the Eved buys property and sells it, etc., and then whether his master can take it away from the other buyers versus as far as the issur v'heter component, it wouldn't work. Anyway. So Abaye is saying, so Shoyvav is Mane Tori. And in fact, Abaye is going according to his own Shita, to Omar, where he said before, back on Daf Yud Gimel, Eidav Achsum of Zachin Loi, as soon as the Eidim signed the Shtar, then it went either Zoycha for him. So even before it reached the recipient. So yes, he says in our case then, even since the Shoyvav was written in Nissan, that is when it takes effect, even if the actual payment to the ksuba didn't take place until the following Tishrei. So we have two ways of understanding the din of the shovah of our Mishnah. We were saying that, if in the Mishnah we're saying that if there's a concern that the shovah may have actually not been used yet, where the person who wrote the shovah, in this case the wife, changed her mind and decided not to even give it after all, then you have the concern, then you can't return it. That would be what we call in the Gemara, Ein Ha Isha Moide, if she doesn't agree that it is a valid shover. However, when it's a valid shover, then you have the Machlok, the Sabaya and Rava, exactly what we do in that case. Is it that, they both agree that you do return it, but the question would be why? According to Rava, the reason is because she could have been Moichel it anyway, and therefore, in effect, she has a Migoy, or however we explain it exactly, and therefore we can say the Shover is valid from the date, and therefore we can say the Shover is valid as of when it was written, and according to Abaye, you don't need that anyway, always a Shover or any other Shtar is valid as of the date it was written. Okay, Mishnah says, "Motze igros shum." Now here, let's talk in the previous Mishnayos, we learned about shtaris that you shouldn't return if you find them because of all the various concerns that we've been learning over the last week. Whether we're talking about matters of that the shtar may have been written and not even given yet, it may be forged, it may be already paid off, etc., etc. But now, on the other hand, we're going to talk about ones where you do return them. So the Mishnah says, Motze igros shum. If you find letters of shum, so meaning, Rashi explained, that based in, so you have a situation where somebody owes, where Reuven owes money to Shimon, he's not paying the debt, so based in writes out a document for Shimon, ultimately, after going through the whole process of how the Baal Chayv is paid, ultimately, based in writes out a document for Shimon saying that we evaluated such and such property that belongs or used to belong to Reuven, and it's worth X amount, and you can take that in payment of your debt. So though that kind of thing is called igros shum, the word shum, meloshen shumah that they evaluated the value of the property, and igros means letters of. The Tosfos Yom Tov actually explains that since the person wants it publicized, that's how it is. So it's clear to everybody why he's taking over this field, is why the Mishnah uses the word igros, which literally means letters of. Anyway, the igros mazon, or you find igros mazon, where a person, for example, accepted, where a person took on himself as a voluntary obligation that he's going to support his stepdaughter. So a man is marrying a woman who has a daughter from a previous marriage, and he accepts on himself as part of the deal that he's going to, as part of the deal of marrying the mother, that he's going to support the daughter for X number of years. So that he writes out a document of that, that's called igros mazon. Shtore chalitza, or we find a document showing that the woman has had chalitza and now she's able to remarry. Ushtore birurin, Umionin, or we find a shtar of Mion, where a girl, where as we learned extensively in Yevamos, a girl below the age of Bas Mitzvah, her father passed away, and Midaraisa, her father, is the only one who can accept Kedushin on her behalf. So now, instead, after her father passed away, her mother or her brothers marry her off. So her marriage exists only derabanan, and she can cancel at any time by doing Mion, by saying that I don't want to be married to this guy anymore. And then Beis Din writes her out a shtar miyun, which certifies, basically summarizes and certifies that she has in fact done miyun and is free to remarry. So all those kinds of things. Or shtare birurin. Another one would be shtare birurin, which we'll see in the Gemara, two explanations of what that means. V'chol maisa beistin, or any other maisa beistin, any other document that was executed by beistin. Hareza yachzir, those kinds of things you can return. We learned a few blocks ago, two possibilities of Maisa Beis Din. One is that it means any shtar of any kind that's been certified by Beis Din, because once it's been certified, once it has a henpik from Beis Din that they certify the signatures, etc., then it means that it is a valid shtar, and we're not concerned about that it may have been paid off, or because if it was paid off, it should have been ripped up. Or that we said maybe on the other hand, Maisa Beis Din means only documents that to begin with are written by Beis Din that have not been listed here. For example, we talk about Shtore Chaltosa V'Adrachta, the documents that say that confirm the Malva's ownership of the karka that he took away from the Loiva, or Shtore Chaltosa and Adrachta, documents that give him the right to go and see what he can seize in payment of the debt. So two possibilities of what Maisa Beis Din means. Anyway, Hareza Yachsu, in all those cases, you can return these things because there's no possibility of Shemen Nimlach. You can't say he changed his mind and decided not to give them like in the previous Mishnah, because Beis Din written them only about something that they definitively found as the case. As far as Peroin, as far as that they were paid off, Rashi points out, you can't really talk about Peroin when it comes to such shtaris. They're not the kind that is subject to Peroin. Now, when it comes to Igris Shum, you do, and we did learn before that even after property was taken away from the Loiva in satisfaction of the debt, still he always has the option, according to the Nahau Dori, up to 12 months, and according to Amemar, anytime in the future, to go and pay the Malva money and get back his property, but because of Asisa Yoshiva Toiv, but Rashi points out in that case, then still, if he doesn't take care to get back the document in that case, that's his problem, and we're not concerned about that. He should have had that document. He shouldn't be going and buying back that property unless he's able to receive back the document and then go rip it up. Mishnah continues, Motzah b'chafisa, suppose you find a shtar. Till now we've been talking about that you just found a loose shtar in the street. Now let's say you find the shtar. Now let's say you find the shtar in a chafisa, in a chafisa or dluskima, which are various kinds of containers that we'll learn on Amud Beis what they are. The point is, now it's a little bit different, because now there's a simon. Either you could say the very fact that they're in a certain kind of container is a simon, or you could say that it means that a person comes and gives a simon on the container itself. So now you don't have the concern that we had about loose shtaris we find before. When we found a loose shtar, you have the concern we've been learning all along that the very fact that it was dropped and you have a suffix who it belongs to creates a reyesa, creates a weakness in that shtar, and therefore that drives the various halachas we've been learning over the last couple of days. But here we found that b'chafisoi b'dluskema, and therefore there's a simen, then that's another matter. Then you have the rule that then you have a different rule. So if a person finds it b'chafisoi b'dluskema, or if he finds tachlich shal shtaris, if he finds a bundle of shtaris, whereas we're going to learn on Amud Beis, now there's a simen regarding that. Oh yeah, guda shal shtaris, or a tachlich means a wrapped bundle. A guda just means a bundle. We're going to see on Amud Beis the difference between them. Anyway, the point is, there you have a simen, because you have a simen, how they were wrapped and folded and tied together, and how many there are, etc. So then hareis hayachzu, in those cases, you do return it to whoever gives a simen. Now we learned a couple of days ago, and we're going to learn in detail in the second parak the whole question of whether simonim are daraisa or dirabanan. But even if we say that they're dirabanan, fine, it's dinim mominus over here, and the chachamim can make a takana saying that you have to return them even based on simonim, as we talked about the other day. We're not talking even about a simon muvhak, a unique simon that is in fact unique only to this thing. We can be talking about a simon she'ene muvhak, a simon that's not quite so distinctive, but still distinctive enough. So midaraisa, whether such a simon is valid or not, is going to be the subject of a sugya in the next parak. But in any case, here the chachamim are saying that you return it. So the kama aguda shal shtaris, how many shtaris do you need in order for it to be considered an aguda? Shloshik shur and zebazeh, you need at least three that are tied to one another, and therefore that's a simon, as the Gemara is going to explain out, as the Gemara is going to explain on Amud Beis. Why that is, because when you're making an announcement that I found, you're going to announce, I found shtoros. Now, miot rabim shtayim. So if you say shtoros, automatically that includes two. So therefore, there have to be three or more in order for somebody to be able to give the simon of how many shtoros there were. So you have to have at least three. Reb Shimon Gamliel, Reb Shimon Gamliel says it depends really what the situation is with these three shtoros. If you find three shtaris and each one says the same name of the loiva, and it mentions three different malvim. So one shtar says that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Another says that he borrowed from Levi. Another says that Reuven borrowed from Yehuda. Yachzer lo loiva. Then Shimon Gamliel says you should always return them to the loiva, because obviously, why would the three shtaris be together? Must be that he paid off all three debts and they returned him the shtaris so that he can hold on to them and do whatever he wants with them. And therefore the shtaris, the fact that they're all together, would demonstrate necessarily they have to be his. Otherwise, what are all three of them doing by him? Otherwise, what are all three of them doing by one person, given that Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda are different people? On the other hand, Shloisha, Loivim, and Echad, but if it's the other way around, if you have one shtar that says that Reuven borrowed from Shimon, and another, if one says that Reuven borrowed from Yehuda, and another one says that Shimon borrowed from Yehuda, and another one says that Levi borrowed from Yehuda, Yachzer l'malva, then Rav Shimon Gamliel says, in that case, you return it to Yehuda, same thing. Obviously, then it means that the shtaris have not been paid off yet, and therefore, that's why Yehuda still has them in his possession. Continues the Mishnah. And the usual rule is, by the way, the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel and Mishnah in general, with a couple of exceptions. This isn't one of the exceptions, so the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Next, the Mishnah continues. Motza shtar ben shtaroisa. If a person finds a shtar among his shtaris, ve'en yadeh mativoy, and he doesn't know what the story with it is. So Rashi explains that we're talking about that he finds a shtar in his filing cabinet. He doesn't know, for example, is this something? So he's neither of the parties in the shtar, Rashi explains. So he's a sholish. He's a third party who was given the shtar to hold in escrow. But he doesn't remember. Was it the loiva who gave it to him to hold on to, and that means the debt's already been paid off? Is it the malva who gave it to him, and it means the debt hasn't been paid off yet? He's not sure. So he doesn't know. So then you have to leave it until Eliyahu comes, meaning he doesn't return it to either one of them because we can't be sure. There are Rishonim who learn that now Rashi says that we're talking about that he himself is he's the Sholish, that he's not one of the parties to the Shtar. However, there are Rishonim who explain. I think the Sefer HaTrumas explains that no, we can actually be talking about over here that the Malva himself finds the shtar among his shtaris, and he's not sure whether it was paid off yet or not. So it's left until the Eliyahu comes, meaning he can't collect with such a shtar. Another din, a separate din, and actually points out this is not a continuation of the previous din. This is the Mishnah is telling us a number of dinim, each one referring to a different case, to a different scenario involving shtaris. So another din, im yeshi man simponis. If a person finds among his shtaris, he finds with them a simpoin, which a simpoin is another name for a shoiver. Tosfos on Amud Beis explains that when the document is held by the malvin, that's called a simpoin, because the word simpoin means something that's mevatel something else. The Gemara, for example, in some places mentions the concept ein simpoin ba'avodim, that there are many kinds of things where you find a certain flaw or a certain defect in an eved that you bought, And we say those kinds of things are, we say those kinds of things don't invalidate the sale. So we see that the word simpon means something that invalidates something else. And so here, when the shtar is still in the hands of the malva, then it's called a simpon because it's mevatel, the effect of the shtar that it refers to. When the loiva has it, then it's called a shover because it breaks the power of the shtar. So two different names for the same kind of document, depending who's holding on to it, Tosfos says. The word simpon, by the way, also has a whole different meaning. It also means, in Hilchos Treifos, the word simpon means one of the bronchi, one of the large branches for air in the lungs, and also, I think, in some other parts of the body, how that relates to the word simpon over here, I don't know. Anyway, the point is that now a person finds, among his shtaris, he finds a simpon, and saying, he finds simponus, saying that those documents have been paid off already, then he should follow what it says in the simponus, meaning, in other words, yes, since it's in, since the simpon says that the debt that Reuven owned him, the shover says this debt that Reuven took out, that Reuven borrowed money on Rosh Chodesh Nissan for X amount has now been paid off, then fine, the shover says it's been paid off, so that's it, then he can't collect on the original shtar chov. It's true, in other words, that it's true, as the Gemara is going to point out, that usually in that case, the shover ought to be in the hands of the loiva. What's it doing in the hands of the malva? But we'll deal with that point in the Gemara. Okay. So the Gemara asks, one of the things we mention in the Mishnah is, shtore birurin. So my shtore birurin, what is the definition of shtore birurin? Here in Bavel, they explain that it means shtori tanosa, shtoris that show that describe the tightness of each side in basting. So birurin, they're used to clarify what the actual arguments were that in basting. So Reuven comes to basting with such and such a claim. Shimon counterclaims such and such. The sofer adayanim, the court reporters write down each of their arguments. So those kinds of things then are called shtori birurin. So in that case, it's easy enough to see why we would return them regardless, because again, there's no possibility of piroin, they're just the record of what happened in Bastin, and therefore, so obviously the thing happened in Bastin, they wouldn't have been written otherwise, and piroin is not relevant. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, rather, shtori tanosa means zebor la'echad, but zebor la'echad, you have cases where instead of going to a regular duly constituted Bastin, instead the two people decide among themselves that we're going to go to an ad hoc Bastin. It's called the Mishnah in Sanhedrin describes Zebura Layachad. Each one picks a Dayan who he knows and trusts, and then there's Machlokas in the Mishnah over there who picks the third Dayan, whether it's the two Bali Dinim jointly or whether it's the two Dayanim who've been picked so far, but whatever, that kind of thing. They have it nowadays also. It's called a Zabla Bastin for short, because Zabla stands for Zebura Layachad. So in that case, then they write down who picked which Dayan to sit on the Bastin. So again, obviously this happened, and obviously there's no Piroin, and therefore, yes, you can return the Shtar. The point of writing it down would be that Rashi explains, once you write it down, then it prevents any of them from changing their mind. Later on, one of them might say, wait, I didn't choose that guy as my Dayan, so as one of the three Dayanim, so now we pull out the Shtar and we show him that not so. Okay, we said in the Mishnah of Chomaisa based in Hareza Yachse, we said that you return any Maisa based in, where again we said two possibilities. Chomaisa based in can mean any shtar that at any time was handled by based in, for example, a shtar that has a henpik in it of any kind, or it can mean specifically shtaris that are written by based in, such as shtari chaltos of Adrachta, as we learned previously. So the Gemara tells now the same story that we learned two blocks ago on Daf Yud Ches. There was a get that was found in the Beis Din of Rav Huna, where it had been brought there in order to certify it to be Mekayim and write a henpik on it. And the document said that the get said that it was written b'shviri masa da'al rochis nara, that it was written in the city of Shviri, which is located on the river Rochis. As we talked about the other day, strictly speaking, al pi halacha, you don't have to write the name of the river that the city is located by. But in practice, it's pretty much universally agreed among the poskim that you should ad kedekach. In fact, in other words, there are some poskim who are hesitant about having a get written in a place where you don't have a river nearby. Anyway, the point is that it makes it that now the name of the city, that now we can identify the city distinctively, because political boundaries can change, but rivers stay the same, and their names generally stay the same as well. So previously we quoted the story on Daf Yud Ches in connection with the question where the Mishnah mentioned over there a case where you found a get. Here we're bringing it in connection with what we say over here, Maisa based in. So Rav Huna says, we have to be concerned that there might be two cities named Shviri, and therefore that maybe in the other Shviri. So now Rashi explains, based on the Gemara that we learned before, in the one city of Shviri that we know of only one person, only one Yosef ben Shimon, whose name and our get that we found has the name Yosef ben Shimon in it. So we know it can't possibly be anybody else from the Shviri that we know who wrote this get. But there might be another Shviri that we don't know about that has another Yosef ben Shimon living in it. And therefore, not necessarily is this the same get that now the shliach is coming and telling us he lost the get and he wants it back. Not necessarily is it the same. Or we talked about there that Tosfos in Baba Basra says that maybe Rav Huna is not saying as a fact that chayshinim l'shnei shviri. He's asking it as a question. Chayshinim l'shnei shviri. Do we have to be concerned that maybe there are two shviris and therefore that this get might have come from the other one? And the Gemara continues, like we learned there, Amalei Rav Chista l'Rabba. So Rav Chista, who was Rav Huna's Talmud and his Chaver, told Rabba, who was from the next generation of Talmudim, Puk Ayin, go look into this, go see what proofs you can find one way or the other on this. This evening, Rav Huna is going to be asking you about it. Meaning, in other words, either if we said Rav Huna is saying definitively, Chayshinim l'shnei shviri, then it means that he's saying Rav Huna is going to test you whether, in fact, whether is going to ask, do you agree with that and bring you proofs one way or the other? Or if Rav Huna was asking it as a question, then Rav Chista is telling him, Rav Huna is now going to ask you, Rabba, to bring a proof whether we can resolve that doubt one way or the other. So Nafak, Rabba went out, Doc, he checked into it, but Ashkach, and he found on Mishnah at the time, Kol Maisa based in Arezi Yaxer, so any Maisa based in you return. And this is an example of a Maisa Beis Din because it has a henpik on it from Beis Din, and the Mishnah is implying that we don't have to be worried about another Yosef ben Shimon even in one city. So the same thing when we don't know that there's another such person of the same name. So the same way over here, we don't have to be worried about there might be another Shviri. But now when we learned this on Daf Yud Ches, the Gemara just stopped there because it was just out to prove that the point is that Rabba had held, as we learned over there, that only when you have two factors against returning the get, number one, that's Shayoris Mitzuyas, that people are always traveling through, and number two, that we know of two Yosef ben Shimons, only then do you not return the get, otherwise you would. That was how we learned it there. Unless you find it right away. Here, though, the Gemara tells the rest of the story. Omelet of Amram l'Rabba. So Rab Amram asks Rabba, "Heifi poshet mar isurim imamoina. How are you learning the answer to a matter of isur v'heter from a matter of mamon? In our Mishnah, when we're saying that you return documents, we're talking about things involving mamon. How can you prove from that we should also go return this get, which is not just a matter of mamon; it's a matter of isur v'heter?" In fact, Tosfos points out we have cases where we find we're more machmir in mammon than we do in iser v'heter. We say ein hochen mammon acha aroiv. When it comes to mammon, we don't go according to the majority. Whereas when it comes to iser v'heter, we could even when you have a chazaka of iser keneged the roiv, then we're not concerned about roiv. In many cases of Issa v'heter, we do follow Roiv when it comes to Issa v'heter. Tosfos gives the example, for example, that you have, when you shecht an animal, the Gemara discusses in Cholin, how do you know that the exact spot you shechted the animal, it didn't have a hole in its esophagus before that, and it's food pipe, which therefore would make it treif. And you have a chazaka, after all, until now, the animal had a chazaka being also because it was alive, and it's also as Eiv Menachai. And yet we say roiv animals do not have such holes, and therefore we can follow roiv. So we see that by isur v'heter we follow roiv. By momen we often say ein hochan momen achar roiv. So what's Rav Amram's question anyway? And Tosfos says fine, but when it comes to an eshes ish, you can say that we're more machna. We had example we learned a couple of years back in Yevamos, for example, examples. Where a woman's husband has disappeared, and for example, he drowns in mayim she'en lam soif, in a body of water where you can't see the edges of it. And even though roiv of people who fall into such water do drown, nevertheless, we're still choshish, and his wife doesn't remarry. Then also Tosfos discusses there may be midaraisa. In fact, we're not choshish about such a thing, but by midrabanan we would. So all of that factors into Rav Amram's question of why you're trying to learn isur from mom. Omalei, so Rabbah answers him back, troda, which is a sharp word. Rashi over here translates that it means mishumam, like idiot or something like that. We had a similar thing in Bava Kamma, also involving Rav Amram. Actually, there it was Rava and Rav Amram, and there we had the word tedura over there, which Rashi explained over there. Aim lave, you have no mind. You're not thinking straight. There's a couple of places in Shas where such an expression is used. There were also different girsois about it. Rabbeinu Hanano but the Oruch brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that the word is not trodo with a dalet, but rather trodo with a resh, and it's related to the word rear, which means saliva. So it means like you're somebody who just drools. You're so foolish. You're such an idiot that you drool. Anyway, he says you don't realize what you're talking about. Shtori chalitza u'minunintanan. Our Mishnah mentions cases of isur v'heter as well. It mentions a shtar chalitza. It mentions a shtar miun. Both of those have an effect on matters of isur v'heter as well, and yet whether the woman is allowed to remarry, and yet Mishnah is saying you can return those also. So he's saying to Rav Amram, don't tell me that this concept of returning it is only by matters of mamon, where the chachamim can be more maple. Even we see, even when matters of an eshes ish, we're mach. Now, what was Rav Amram thinking? He knows that those words say in the Mishnah, so the Pnei Yeshua talks about that Rav Amram thought to draw a distinction, as Tosfos is saying, there's a special reason to be machmir by an eshes ish. So Rav Amram took the view that maybe by shtori chalitza umyunin, maybe there's less of a concern. Just like most isurim, only when you have the chumrah of an eshes ish, where after all, when it comes to chalitza, it's not a concern of an eshes ish. Her husband's already dead. It's just a question of whether she's allowed to remarry, whether she's a yevama lashuk or not. Whether she's free to remarry or not, and in the case of Miyunin, whether the marriage that existed in Rabbanan still exists or not. Sort of Amram figured that maybe in those cases there's more reason to argue to be Mekel as opposed to by a get, which is necessary on a Daraisa level. But Rabbah is saying there's no distinction. This word trodda, by the way, it's a very sharp insult, as we see. It means an idiot or a drooler or whatever. With that said, Ben Yehoyada softens it a little bit, and he says you can actually understand it as a compound of two words, tar, which means wake up, and da, which means this. So he's telling him, like, wake up to this and realize that your argument is flawed. Anyway, continues the Gemara, poka arza de bei rab. The cedar of the yeshiva broke. So you have like a central pillar over there that the whole Beis Medrash rests on and holds up the ceiling or whatever, and it broke. So Mar Omer Mishum L'Sai Didi Poka, Mar Omer Mishum L'Sai Didi Poka. Each one of them was saying it happened because of my L'Sai, meaning because of my mazel. So Rashi explains that Rav Amram is saying you called me by an insulting name. Therefore, this column in the Beis Medrash split because of my mazel, because you called me an insulting name. On the other hand, Rabbah said, on the other hand, you're trying to publicly refute me in the Beis Medrash and embarrass me by claiming that I don't know how to derive things from a Mishnah, and therefore it was because of that thing. Marsha points out, it's not really like this, what are each of them trying to take credit for this? No, it means each one is trying to say, my mazel is stronger than your mazel. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada says that in a way, it's also, each one of them is also taking responsibility for it. The fact that this Auza de Bei Rab broke, it means now Mepashtos, it means that they're not going that people are not going to be able to learn in the Beis Medrash until it's fixed because it's dangerous. It means a lot of money is going to have to be spent on it or whatever. So there's a lot of bittul Torah and whatever involved. So therefore, each one of them is not taking credit, but rather taking responsibility because of the way I acted is why this is why this happened. And now it disrupts the Beis Medrash. With all that said, by the way, the Chavis Yor has a tshuva on this subject. He talks about, you have all over Shas, where Chachamim use seemingly very insulting expressions to one another, including this over here. And he says, when they're Chaverim, then maybe they don't mind so much. So therefore, it's not, especially when one is greater than the other. Here, Rabba is a greater Amora than Rav Amram. So therefore, Rav Amram may not have actually been so deeply insulted by it. But nevertheless, he's saying, "Mishum l'sai didipoka," that Hashem stood up for me. That because my mazel was stronger than yours, and therefore that this happened. But not necessarily that he was insulted on a personal level. The Mishnah had said, "Motzah b'chafisa b'dluskema." We said if you find a shtar in a chafisa or in a dluskema, so my chafisa. It means a small bag. My deluskema, Omer Rav Bar Shmuel, tlika de savi. A deluskema is a tlika de savi. Rashi explains that it's a little bag where old people keep their personal effects in. So a chemes would be a leather bag. Rashi explains usually it's used for storing wine. And here instead, you have this document in it. Tlika de Savi would be a little handbag or something that old people use for their personal effects, so they don't lose track of it. So now again, if you find the shtar in that, then you have a certain kind of sin. Tosfos discusses, like we talked about before, are we talking about that just the fact that it's in the chafisa or dluskema itself is a simon? Not necessarily. The Gemara mentions in the next perek that people usually put their documents in a chafisa. So rather, Tosfos says it means, in other words, that they're giving a simon on the chafisa or the deluskema itself. It's true, of course, you might have lent out the chafisa or deluskema to somebody else, but nevertheless, we're not choshish for that. Rabbi Hanano, by the way, points out, he learns a little differently, that deluskema means a box. And he points out that that's actually, the deluskema comes from a Greek word meaning just that, meaning a box. Anyway, the point is you find the shtar in a chafisa or a dluskema, so you have either a simon, the very fact that it's in a chafisa or a dluskema, or the fact that the person is giving a simon on the chafisa or dluskema. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, tachrich shal shtaris, or agudah shal shtaris, we said if you find a wrap of shtaris or a bundle of shtaris, then you return them. Tanan rabbanan, kamahu tachrich shal shtaris, what is the, how many is the minimum to make a tachrich shal shtaris? Shloisha kruchin zeh bezeh, when you have three shtaris that are rolled up together. So the simon is, in other words, that you have three of them rolled up together, that itself can be the simon. But kama he agudash or shtaris, and how much is an agudash or shtaris? Shloish shurin zebezeh, is when you have three shtaris tied to one another. So they're not all rolled up together, but they're tied one to the next. So in other words, Rashi explains, so now the one who found it is going to say, I found shtaris, and the other one is going to come and say, here, I have a simon, there were three of them rolled together, or three of them tied together. So the Gemara asks, shamat minok kesher simon, does that mean that the knot itself can serve as a simon? Because you're saying that if you have three of them knotted together, so he can say it was a particular kind of knot. The question being, in other words, Rashi says, Now elsewhere, the Gemara asks that. We're going to talk about Kesher Simon in the next Perek, actually, although Rabbi Shaya Pick points out that the Gemara there doesn't ask the question of whether Kesher is a Simon. It seems to take it as a given. But anyway, the point is, can we, in fact, prove that from our Mishnah? Otherwise, what's the specific Simon? And the answer is Hatoni Rabchia Shloisha Kruchin Zebedeh. No, because you have to realize that we're talking about that there are three shtaris that are wrapped together that are rolled together and tied. So therefore, so the simon is the fact that you have three of them. So I'm going to ask Zihochi Hainu Tachrich. Well, then a Tachrich and Aguda come out the same thing. Mainly, you're going to say. That if an agudah, mainly you're going to say an agudah or shtaris means that they're tied together and the knot itself, the type of knot itself serves as a simon. Then you can say in that case, then you would prove from that that the type of knot is in fact a simon. But if you're going to say that the simon is the fact that you have three shtaris, then what's the difference between a tachrich and aguda? And the answer is tachrich kochad b'chad b'roisha d'chavrei. When it comes to a tachrich shal shtaris, what it means is, in other words, each one starts with where the previous one ends. So in other words, you take the one shtar, you roll it up. Then you take just before the end of the first one, you take the second one and roll it around it, and the same thing the third one, and then you tie a string around them. Aguda would be the romu hadadio kruchis, and aguda shoshtaris would be where the three of them are placed one exactly on top of the other, and then they're rolled up and tied. So the Gemara says, my machr is, okay, so when you find a tachrich or an aguda of shtaris, what's the announcement you make about the lost object? On the face of it, minion. So on the face of it, you're going to say, I found a bundle of three shtaris. In that case, my irit losa, nami. In that case, what's the difference? Why would you need davka three? The same thing would apply even if you find two. You could say the person gives a simon. I found two. The person gives a simon. My shtar, you say, for example, I found three shtaris, and the other guy comes and says, yes, they were put together, two shtaris even. It wouldn't matter. The person says, I found a bundle of shtaris, and the other one comes and says, yes, they were bundled together in the way that we said. First one was rolled up, and then the second one was rolled up where the first one ended, etc. So Ella, kid Amar Ravina Tiva Machriz. No, rather we have to say the same way as in the next paragraph. Ravina points out that when you find coins, you don't say the number of coins. You say I found coins, and the other guy has to give a simon how many coins there are. Hachanami Shtori Machriz. The same way over here, he announces I found Shtori in the plural, and the other guy has to provide the simon of how many Shtoris there were. So that's why you need a minimum of three, because otherwise, if he says two, then he's just repeating what you said, because Miyot Rabim Shnai. So it comes out from the way the Gemara is saying it, and the way that Rashi is saying it means, in other words, you really need two simanim. You need to be able to give the number of shtaris as well as the way that they were tied and bundled together. And in fact, the Maharshal points out there's a logical reason behind it. Usually you don't have to give two simanim, but over here, if he doesn't mention both points, then that itself weakens his claim. In fact, the Rosh, for that reason, disagrees with Rashi on that and says that no, all it is just the number itself should be enough for the simon. So Maharshal explains that no, because over here the fact is you would expect him to say that there were three of them and that they were bundled together in a certain way. If he only mentions one of those points, then that weakens the possibility that it really is his bundle. Because in other words, it can happen. In other words, Maharshal says when you have one simon, if he doesn't find the other simon, you could say that how does he not know the other simon? Obviously, it's not his. As opposed to in a normal case where there's only one simon, then yeah, you expect the person to give only one simon. We said in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer Echad Alovim Mishloisha Yachsel Alovim Vachola. We said that if you have Reb Shimon Gamliel distinguished. Whether the three shtaris that we found are all from one loiva to multiple malvim, or whether it's one malva and multiple loivim, and Shimon Gamliel had drawn the distinction based on that who you return the bundle of shtaris to. So in the first case, echad aloiv mishloisha, Shimon Gamliel, echad aloiv mishloisha, yachzul aloiva v'chola, because the sakadaydach, the malvin ninu, if you were going to think that these three shtaris belong to the various malvim, to Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, all of whom lent money to Reuven, my bo gabi adadi, what would these three shtaris be doing together? Obviously, it must be that Reuven dropped them, and if Reuven has those shtaris, it means they were paid off. So the Gemara says, why? Maybe somebody is taking them to Beis Din to be Makayim them, and therefore you might have shtaris from different people that were given to a shliach for him to take the Beis Din to be Makayim. And the answer is, Dimakayimi, we're talking about where they already are Makuyim, and therefore they don't need that. Each one has a henpik in it that Beis Din has already seen them and validated the signature. Okay, the question is, Duma Miyadah Safra Nafil. Fine, but maybe it's the sofer who wrote the shtaris who dropped it before we had the chance to give them to the Malvim. And the answer is, Loimashi Inish Kiyuma Miyadah Safra. Once the shtar is Makuyim, A person doesn't usually leave it in the hands of the cipher. He takes it back as soon as possible. So therefore, there's very little likelihood that after the henpeck was done, that it should remain for any amount of time by the cipher, and therefore that he might drop it. No, that's hardly likely. Okay. On the other hand, we said, if three people, if the shtaris show that three people borrowed from one person, so it shows that Reuven, Shimon, and Levi all borrowed from Yehuda, then we said, then you return this bundle of shtaris to the malva, because obviously it was his. Same idea. If you're going to tell me they belong to the loivin, my bo gabi hadadi, what would they be doing by one another? What would they be all be doing together? Again, the fact that they're all together implies that Yehuda had them and then he dropped them, meaning that they haven't been paid yet. So they might ask, same thing, Jumla Mikhtavinu Azli. Why? Maybe they were lost to begin with. The three borrowers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, all went to the sofer to ask him to write a shtar for each one of them, and they haven't yet given them, and they haven't taken out the loan yet. And the answer is, we have to be talking about where these shtaris are written in the handwriting of three different soferim. So obviously, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi each had their shtar written by a different sofer. So now there's no possibility that they all had gone to the sofer to begin with to ask them to write it. So they might ask, v'dumal akiyum minu azli, why? Still, maybe they're going to be mekayim them. And then they gave it to one of them to bring on behalf of the three of them, and he dropped it. And the answer is Malva Mekayim Shtari, Loivala Mekayim Shtari. It's the Malva who usually is Mekayim the Shtar. He wants to make sure that he can collect with the Shtar, so he's going to be Mekayim it, so Beistin can certify, can validate the signatures and write a henpeck on it. The Loiva is not going to do that, so therefore it's not very likely that the Loivim went to be Mekayim the Shtar. And since we're saying that it's written in the handwritings of different Soferim, then obviously they didn't all go to one Sofer, and therefore in that case, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that you can return them to the Malva. So in short, in the case where it's one Loiva and three Malvim, you need it to be a Shtar Mekuyam, and then you can return it to the Loiva. And otherwise we have to be concerned that maybe they're taking it to be Mekayimit. And in the case of three borrowers and one Malva, then we're saying that it has to be in three different handwritings, and that's enough for us to return it to the Malva. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and we'll take up the case of Simponus, which is again another name for Shovrim that we learned in the Mishnah, and we'll finish off the Perek, Bez Hashem.
Yeah.